You are listening to Glorious Morning, the breakfast show with a difference, right here on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
If you've ever wondered what truly goes on behind the closed doors of the legal system, I mean, talking about beyond the robes, the gavels, and the formal courtrooms, then our next guest is about to pull back the curtain for you. He's a prominent legal mind whose journey is defined by an unwavering commitment to truth, even when the cost was high. I'll need some assistance with this one. Brother Mondoka, tell me, how do I say your first name?
First and foremost, good morning to
everybody. Good morning to you.
Because basically the name is D. Lazley. It's basically a coalescing of two names.
Are you
D
for real? Lazley.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the quick primer. The background is when I was in grade school, my friends used to laugh at me because my first name was D, and then the middle name was Lazley. So I thought, you know, what would happen if I put the two together? So we have D. Lazley.
Okay. I would have never thought that this is how you came about to it. And that's simple enough, right? When you then put it like that, D. Lazley Mondoka Esquire. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us right here as we look
Thank you very much. And FYI.
Yeah.
When on my call day, the Chief Justice of Zambia struggled to pronounce my name. So it's a germ I put in the book as well, just as a side note. But he was worse. He said, instead of saying D. Lazley, he said Des. Des Lazley.
Yeah, because I mean, when you try to read all the vowels and try to make sense there, it sounds like a tongue twister to some degree. So please pardon the Chief Justice.
No. I actually met him a few months ago before my launch, just to to laugh about the same. All is well.
So we are going to be reviewing the book, The Outspoken Magistrate: A Tale of Adversity, Resilience, and Friendship, together with Vision there. Maybe let's talk about how you got to this. Give us some more. I mean, quite a topic, The Outspoken Magistrate. What's that about?
I hear you. Oh, so once upon a time, I was sitting as a magistrate in the dusty courtrooms of Mbala. It's a far-flung post on the northern part of Zambia. It should border some area near Tanzania, somewhere there, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So there was, ushered into the corners or the space of being a magistrate, or the bench, as it were. So while there, I remember, because the station I was working at was not very, it wasn't a hectic one. It was not a very busy station. And thank God, because so meaning a busy station means there's more crime in the space.
Ah,
it's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So within the time, I figured, look, why not, you know, invest this extra time that I have. So that's how this whole idea was born. And incidentally, there's a lady in South Africa. She's a legal commentator.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the name, because I always trip on that name as well. But basically, I had posted one of my judgments on my LinkedIn. Okay. And one of my superiors, in fact, a judge then, went to my inbox and said, look, you don't have the rights to do that. In fact, you're misleading in a manner of speaking, because you are a junior court. Okay. You're not a superior court.
Okay.
So because your decisions are subject to appeal, you should not give your comments as liberally as you have done.
Okay.
Yeah, but my understanding, and I think it's a global reality, judgments are public document. Okay. They're not the preserve of, it's not your private ledger.
Yeah.
It is something that has to, because at the end of the day, expressions of a good legal system show that, you know, the law should be accessible. So essentially, that is what, you know, that is what triggered my desire to share. So the columnist that I was talking about is Ricard.
Okay.
There's the lady by the name of Ricard.
Okay.
Yeah. So she saw that decision that got me in trouble with my Zambian counterparts here, and then wrote an article, which was the first time I think a magistrate decision was published on Africa Lee. So now after that, I saw that, in fact, one of my colleagues tagged me and sent it to me saying, look, I didn't even know that was making headways anyway.
Yeah.
And from there, one of the things she said was an outspoken Zambian magistrate has challenged the law on insulting language. So just that expression, an outspoken magistrate, is what inspired the title that we have today. Because for all intents and purposes, I've been for the most part, a very outspoken person. Even when we were in WhatsApp groups and magistrate WhatsApp group, I would speak out and speak up about certain issues, certain injustices that may manifest as and when they appear. So that is a quick primer behind what triggered or what birthed the notion of
Quite an interesting one, quite an interesting one. And I think a feel-good story, if I will, maybe coming through from some adversity, like you said, but also coming through with a victory in it, I would say for justice nonetheless, right? We got a comment here saying, going back to your name there, to say, so did you do this to yourself? Did you change your name? Is it legal or is it just what you call yourself now, D. Leslie?
It's not just a style, like, you know, like, you know, the way you would have, you know, people using an alias. It's not an alias. It's basically frames my legal status.
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, I mean, you say that it was your first name is D and your second name is Leslie. And then you then combined the two.
Actually, because of this, that no longer exists. I am D. Leslie now.
Essentially,
that history of D and Leslie middle name does not no longer exist.
Yeah, but is it at a public level or even legally?
Yes.
Like, if you produce your ID, it will say D Leslie.
Yes.
Wow, fascinating, fascinating. Zero. maybe going back to the book, then it's described as a candid commentary on social. Justice, right? Society and justice, rather. What is one systemic issue in the legal sector that you felt legally or even morally compelled to speak out about?
Much of what I am addressing right now in the preliminary stages is Chapter 11 of the book. It's called Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's essentially what it is. So what I was trying to address is legal minds will tell you that judgments in the subordinate court are what you would style non-citable or non-jurisprudential. So meaning, if I make a decision as a magistrate court, it does not bind. It doesn't create jurisprudence or it doesn't create precedent. So meaning any other court may not be bound by my decision. Yes, it may affect you if you were the criminal and I sentenced you to 5 years. You'll be bound because of that. But ordinarily, academically and in terms of authorities that can be cited, for example, as to persuade a court, a superior court, to make a decision, they can't be used as precedents or cited, as it were.
Yeah.
So essentially, what that means is much of what the decisions that come from a subordinate court are kind of something that would be a bedroom affair. Like it's something shut, sealed, locked up somewhere. You rarely see decisions that come from the subordinate court, And because they're rarely seen by certain entities, there's really to control and quality that will come out of the courts. So for me, that was a problem, because remember, rights of people are still affected. Freedoms and liberties may be at stake. And then there's certain far removed areas in my country where an appeal is Bigfoot. People rarely appeal. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So if a decision is not going to be appealed, at the very least, make it public enough for people to see and appraise and see if what is being done there is justice or not. So for me, that was my burden. And that is what prompted me to, because there was no platform. There is no platform that actually allows us to, or portal, if I may magistrate, to deposit your decisions once they're made, so that, you know, the superior courts can see the kind of work coming from those magistrate, you know, and different stations. And then we still have magistrates today who handwrite their decisions. I get a pen and paper and I'm writing the decision like brick and mortar, my good sir. You're writing down your decision, and guess what? There's nary an expression mentioning the law, besides the fact that okay, this case was brought as an infraction to maybe Section 2 of the Penal Code of Zambia. That is the only law that is cited. So essentially, the works there, an infringement to what the law provides, because the law provides and dictates the kind of how judgment should be framed. I believe it should be Section 69 of the Criminal Procedure Code that dictates, tells you, okay, if you're writing a judgment in criminal matters, this is how you do it. And then there's a civil decision in the case of Zamteo versus Mulwanda in our country, and people like Hebo Ajambwa, you know, that speak of what features a good judgment should have. Now, most of those decisions that come from the lower courts and magistrate courts, they do not conform to good judgment writing, because they almost don't apply properly the law to the facts, okay? Because you need introduction, you need to give the facts, you need to give the law, and then appraise that those facts and weigh it against them. Now, these people who write their judgments by hand, they just cite the section that created the judge, and then the rest is like common sense. That's not something I was willing to live with, because my appreciation, in fact, if I'm just to give further context to why I'm burdened by such what people might perceive as nuance, is Deuteronomy 16:19, do not pervert justice or show partiality, do not accept a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the innocent. Essentially, all I'm saying is, when there is, because there's two concepts when you're trying to deliver justice, because courts exist predominantly to uphold justice. Now, justice is twofold generally. It's the substantial justice, meaning the law says this, and then there's procedural justice, how something has to be done, that procedure. So much of what we see as portrayals or expressions of injustice are procedural. Okay. You did not follow this, therefore, this is an injustice. Yes. So I think, I don't know if that quite satisfies the concern that you have.
Yeah, no, to a degree, certainly. Thank you. I wanted to follow that up then with I mean, the very concept of an outspoken magistrate kind of suggests almost partiality. You've got a view that you're holding and you speak out about it. And yet, I mean, magistrates by definition ought to have almost this impartiality, which means their voice is very neutral, very mellow. I'm sure you've had some pushback on this stance.
I agree. In fact, today people have been interviewed on the back of what I have done so far. I have a young man who called me and said, oh, I'm now a magistrate. And I remember in my interview, they were asking me if magistrates should be sharing their decisions on Chani. And then I remembered you and I answered that, and he was scolded. So essentially, I have, in a way, become a thorn in the flesh. But here's the thing. Predominantly, when you're dealing with the idea of justice, to me, is something that has to be, for example, our laws dictate and that this is the position. So justice to me is subordinated to what justice is in the context of scripture. So if something is not in tandem, for example, in scripture, that's not justice. That's an injustice, because remember, at the end of the day, righteousness is our banner. You know, Christ is the one that scripture says in John that if I be lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. For me, number one thing is justice is lifting up Christ. Because I remember, even when I'm deciding cases, I remember telling a friend that, look, the first time I sentenced somebody to prison, to a custodial sentence or prison, I got sick because I agonized within myself and probed myself. Why, you know, I felt I was responsible for ruining his family. Okay. Now, I know colleagues that just do that work like it's clockwork, like you are unfazed by the fact that, look, by doing that, what happens is, I have seen it firsthand, because there's certain quarters within villages that have a feud, and they've had it for a long time, and they use the court system to settle their personal feuds. Now, you are possessed with a need to do justice, and it looks like, oh, this guy has been brought for assault, and you vindictively want to speak like David and say that man should be brought to death when Nathan comes to him. But the problem was not that, look, there is this issue. The problem was he did not appraise the facts correctly, so he was in a hurry. And for me, I've learned, like, look, if you're going to do this, this is more something that has to evoke in you a sense of dependence on God. Because remember, you're not there when these acts were done. Yeah. And these guys who are prosecuting might have an interest to serve. So you need to be very, very judicious and seek God in this space. Because remember, you, as ignorant as they come, and guess what? Judges and magistrates are not immune from being fooled by the people who come and prosecute matters. So that's one of the things. Now, that issue of being partial, I don't think it's it quite manifests, because I was not using the magistratorial or magistracy as a platform for activism.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I was basically championing what I understand to be the position. Because look, judgments are supposed to be public documents. So if we've not made portals or avenues that allow that people should access these things, then therein lies a problem. So I'm speaking to the principle. Like, the principle is, if it's public, it should be publicized. So that's essentially what then causes me to be caught on the carpet and get in people's crosshairs. Not because I am, you know, setting out to be the troubler of Israel.
Because I think there is a difference. I mean, like you're saying rightly, so you're not an activism for a particular stance which you ruled on. You're an activist of sharing the ruling of whatever it is that the story was about. And I think that then still meets that quota, if you will, of being impartial. I want to underscore the point of this controversy, or the at least the touchiness of the subject that you were found in by wanting to publicize the judgments, because that was already touchy enough, but it seems like it wasn't good enough for you. You then went and wrote a whole book about it. can you please share some some experience that you had as you wrote the book? I mean, you have to then be vulnerable, talk about the experiences as they were, and so forth. It's not a fictional book. It's a story about actual happenings, you know, and serving to be almost a precursor of those that will follow in your footsteps, like you rightly quoted earlier on. Did you experience any moments of hesitation as you wrote, where you're like, hey, should this one come out into the light?
That's a human... that's a human tendency, or attitude, as it were.
Yeah.
We tend to, you know that expression, imposter syndrome? Yeah. So if I'm not mistaken, does it deal with the feeling of feeling not good enough or something?
Yeah.
So those, you'll be possessed with such feelings of trepidation. But one thing that gave me consolation was telling myself, look, I may not be the best example, but I'm still an example.
Mm. Mm.
So you don't have to be the best to be an example. You just have to be an example. Mm. So my experience to me, I told myself my experience is ample enough to be shared.
Yes.
Because one of the greatest injustices of our times is great minds go to the grave without ever chronicling their experiences that would have helped young men navigate the crisis, which is youth, the storms, which is life. So those things. So I told myself, and look, writing is a very lonely endeavor. You have to isolate to write, okay? Because you can't be. I'm very social by nature, but I had to pull back within my season just for me to have my creativity flowing the right way. So those are some of the expressions that, you know, that characterized the season I was in. Look. I knew, look, there's many, I remember having a sit down with one of the prominent legal practitioners in my country, state council. Some
okay.
State council, I won't mention them, maybe just to protect their, mm-hmm. you know, identity. I remember having a conversation saying, look, your story beats mine 1,000 times over because you've lived in this space longer than me and you've done this longer than me. So you have better stories to tell. And then I challenge him saying, look, but you have allowed people like me to tell our stories. Okay? Because you still feel, one, you don't have the time, two, maybe you're looking for that big inspiration before you can start making manifest the things that could help somebody who's down there. Because one of the things that certain people did not see coming was I chronicled the fact in chapter one, one of the things so this book is also a tribute to my mother. I was raised by a single mom. Yeah. So the title is Mother Bear. So basically showing you that, look, adversity should never extinguish your passion. In fact, adversity should fuel you. You should learn to draw. There's that expression is it in the writings of Ellen White that goes like, drawing warmth to the coldness of others. You know what I mean? So for me, my adversity, my lack of privilege, maybe let me just read this part here in my introductory, in the foreword. No, not in the foreword, in the prologue.
Okay.
So there's a part where I'm addressing that life is not fair. So one of the things I say, life is unfair, and that is exactly what makes it fair.
Mm.
In a world where privilege tilts the scale, being overlooked becomes its own strange blessing. No spotlight, no pressure, no waiting crowds until suddenly everyone is paying attention. The paradox is elegant. The absence of fairness can create its own equity. In a world with no guarantees, the lack of status, name or applause is not a barrier. It is an unmarked door. Those born in modest shadows, unnoticed by circumstance, have a stubborn chance to build a legacy no one anticipated. It is within though that indifference that the underdog begins to rise.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I have learned is, and then the other thing, I think one of the biggest themes that comes out of this is success is a group project.
Mm.
You can't succeed on your own. Remember when Christ is leaving, in John chapter 14 to 16, he tells you, I'll send you another comforter.
Yep.
Okay. And then when you go to John 17, he's praying for his disciples. He says that they may be one. Okay, so now to succeed in any space, whether it's mission, Matthew 28, go in there for make disciples of all nations, it is communal. It's a community. It's a group project, which is why scripture says you do much more. Now, doing much more is not a solo issue. You do much more because of your numbers, because you're in Zambia, you're in South Africa, you do much more because Christ was limited as a man.
Mm.
He could only be in one place at a particular time. So I've come to appreciate that you cannot succeed on your own. Yes, you can be hardworking and all that, but your community informs the man that you become tomorrow. So that came out as well.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. Sadly, we'll have to leave it there for today. Magistrate, we truly want to just appreciate your time. Maybe before we let you go, where can people get a copy of the book? How can they access it? And how can they access you if they maybe want to have you over to speak more on these matters?
Okay, so unfortunately for now, I, like Christ, I'm limited in location. So it's only in Zambia. I'm yet to work on the Amazon option as well. But for now, the books are in Zambia. And maybe for now, it's just through me.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can furnish the details of my number and yeah.
You may do
so
that.
I don't know if I can call it out now or maybe certainly. Send it to you.
No, you can send
it. So it's it's +260 976 442764. +260 976 442764.
Alrighty, beautiful.
So
stuff.
that's my number. So I'm in Lusaka, the capital of Zambia. So that's where I'm found, and I have a number of colleagues that have gotten my book, like Simon Gubeni, Lesego. Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff. Well, the number is out there. Let's hope that this work and what you are hoping to achieve will certainly be realized as people continue to get the book in their hands. Thank you once again, Esquire, for coming through and taking the time to share your thoughts with us.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You are listening to Glorious Morning, the breakfast show with a difference, right here on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.